Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987, and also PWTorch.com, the website, and PW Torch, the app. Also, if you're a UFC or MMA fan, be sure to check out our sister website and brand, MMATorch.com, and download our free MMA Torch app in the Apple and Android app stores. This is the PW Torch Livecast on Thursday, April 28th, 2016, and it is Interview Thursday. And I am pleased to bring back my guest from 3 weeks ago for a return visit, one of our favorite recurring guests on the program. That is Matt Morgan, The Blueprint. Matt, welcome back to the Livecast.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We got cut off unceremoniously. Right past the one-hour mark last time due to some internet issues on my end, and I know we had a lot more to talk about, so I'm glad we're able to arrange to have you on again soon. Matt, I want to begin, though, before we get into current events and wrestling talk about what's going on TV, coming up at Payback, NXT, maybe some TNA thoughts on their future, and taking phone calls, which, by the way, people can fill up the phone lines further at 646-721-9828. But I do want to talk about Joni Lauer, China. She died a week ago, she was found dead a week ago, a little over a week ago. She died. Matt, you had been in communication with her recently. I want you to talk about her and how you knew her and what she meant to you and your thoughts on her life and death.
Kind of, it's hard to explain. I met China first when she came into TNA when I was still working there. Do a one-shot deal with them at the time that we were hoping would turn into something more long-term. She would have been great for our show, but, you know, it just didn't work out. But, and just, I'll never forget, I walked into the makeup room. That's where I was kind of came through at Universal to get to the locker room. It was a lot faster trip to go through that way. And China was in there, and that was my first time meeting her. I never met her when I was with WWE. And, you know, she followed me out of the hall, and she's like, I just got to say, I've been here for the last hour, and you're the first person that actually looks like a professional wrestler. And from that moment on, that we kind of just hit it off, you know. There's this, you know, woman I grew up, not grew up, but through college years of watching wrestling, you know, watched very, you know, intensely that the whole DX movement, yeah, and what a major part of it she was. So here's her complimenting me. How do you not be nice to someone who's complimenting you, right?
Yeah.
So just started talking and hit it off, and she always put it out there, you know, if you ever need someone to talk to, you know, here's my number. Give me a shout and go from there. And, you know, on Twitter, through direct message here or there, but mainly through text message. We'd go back and forth anytime I had any questions or any things I wanted her to watch. And a longer story short, where the relationship and friendship kind of really grew was she found out that I was hooked on painkillers and how I had overcome my personal demons with them and the things that I did to achieve that, you know, the strong outpatient treatment and the strong structure one needs to maintain and the discipline to get rid of all of that, you know, and to move on with your life. And so here was someone I was kind of like a big sister in a way to me, right? With giving me wrestling, you know, advice of the business, the politics and the things of that she would try to, you know, bestow upon me, right? And then when we started talking more about addiction, the roles would kind of reverse and hit me up with a bunch of questions as to how I'm coping, how I'm dealing with, you know, life after, you know, using, but still suffering from addiction. You know, that doesn't go away. You know, you're not just clean and sober, then that's it. You know, it's something that's a constant work in progress, you know. Whether someone relapses or they're lucky like me and be able to put 9 years of never relapsing together, it's still the same thing. You never beat addiction, per se. So it was kind of weird how it would kind of like flip-flop that relationship from going from a big sister to me kind of being a big brother in a weird way with dealing with addiction. And she had tons of other people to reach out to that she was getting a ton of good information with other guys that have even more years of sobriety under their belt than me, you know? So that was our relationship.
How did you find out about her death? And I mean, how hard did it hit you considering that she went through what you went through, Matt, but didn't come out of it like you have?
Incredibly non-personal, you know, like I saw it like everyone else did. Actually, I saw it on my Twitter feed of all things, you know, but there's no good way to find no. that out, you know. I never met or was introduced to any of her, you know, closer friends or family or something like that. I'm not even sure if they're even aware of me for that matter. I wasn't like her best friend or something like that. I was somebody that would talk, you know, a handful of conversations about my addiction. That's really about it.
Okay.
And when I found out, just like everyone else, just damn, you know, because she really was. Everyone always keeps saying what a heart of gold, but she really did have a heart of gold. But what a great, great, great human being.
Let's. I'm going to cut to our first break, and when I come back, I want to ask a couple follow-ups on Shina, and then we will get into phone calls.
Sure.
I do want to let people know if you want to participate in the show, in addition to calling the phone number 646-721-9828, you should push 1 on your Touchstone phone, and that will move you into the caller queue. So if you're interested in talking to Matt Morgan, today's guest on the PW Torch Livecast, the number is 646-721-9828. You can talk about Chyna. Memories and thoughts on her would be very welcome at this point, along with thoughts on Raw on Monday, Payback coming up on Sunday. We can look ahead all the way to SummerSlam or WrestleMania next year, and we also want to talk about NXT and TNA. Matt, a big fan of NXT these days. He's retired as a wrestler, but as established 3 weeks ago on the show, very, very much immersed as a fan still and a student of the industry, someone who spent years in it and is still fascinated by it. And he is a great guest. Last time he was on, a lot of compliments from people on Twitter, and I complimented him too. He was a really insightful guest, especially talking about the big man style and how to establish yourself and some of the evolution he went through as a wrestler regarding that. So after this brief break, we'll be back with more with Matt Morgan. When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com. All right, we're back with Matt Morgan, and we are going to talk about Chyna a little bit more. Matt, I actually want to take a step back. It applies to Chyna, and just ask if there's another wrestler out there struggling with pain pill addiction or any kind of prescription pills. I mean, it's coming out that, you know, that might have been a contributing factor to Prince's death the same day that that Chyna's body was found. What I mean, everybody's situation's different. It depends on your support group, how long you've been on them, how hard you're on them, other issues you might have going on medically, mental and physical ailments and baggage and all that. But is there some sort of advice that you would give in particular to a wrestler or a non-wrestler even who's dealing with that issue right now?
Yeah, definitely. Some quick advice would be if you're new to the business or you've already been in the business and you've never tried painkillers, I'm talking the Percocets, the Lortabs, the Lorsets, pills like that, the Oxycontins, even the Somas, all right, which bring you down. Don't try them. As simple as that. As simple as that might sound, I wish I never, ever was introduced to them. I wish I never touched them because I never understood why the guys would come up to me when they heard my pill bottle jiggling in my bag, like I was the Pied Piper when I first started out in OVW. I didn't understand their allure to it, and I was getting over left and right because I didn't want the pills. I didn't think I needed them. You know, I knew I was hurt, but I didn't know what they really did for me. I didn't know the difference between that and Tylenol. I really didn't. I was really dumb about it. And so finally, one day, I tried them to see what all the big deal was about, and it wasn't until I had some severe back spasms when I was in training, but I still had to go to practice, you know, in OVW, because I was starting to be marked off the list as absent like 3 or 4 days in a row, and I didn't want it to look bad that I wasn't trying, you know. So I kept, you know, trying to go through practice, and I started taking them, and I noticed my third time or fourth time maybe taking them, I started to get this cloudy feeling, like this walk on cloud type feeling, if you will, and it was me being high for the first time and not really recognizing it. And it will grab a hold of you, and you, like myself, could be a very functioning addict. Like, nobody knew I had a problem, and I hardly even knew I had a problem. I just knew I liked this feeling that I got. So if you're new to the business, or if you're somebody that's been in the business and never touched those type of painkillers, okay, the hydrocodones and the oxycodones, all right, if you're noticing you're getting, you're up at 2:30 in the morning and you're vacuuming your house, you're getting this ephedrine type rush from it, guess what? Your chances are you're hooked on it and you're high at the moment. Okay, because what those pills do for someone like my wife, or like you, Wade, or somebody that has what I would consider a normal chemical balance, it should make you become not down, but it should relax you. It shouldn't be making you get all uppity and high and like that ephedrine rush or that cocaine rush, if you will, that cocaine can give as well. The Superman type feeling that I and other addicts get from those type of pills. So if you sense yourself, you're getting high and that's the feeling you're having, get the hell off them immediately and know that you can, that those don't match with you. They don't blend with your chemical imbalance. You cannot take those. You need to find a different route to mask your injuries, because you still want to work around being hurt. I get that. That's never going to stop. But there's 1,000 other ways to do so. It's called getting off your ass, going into physical rehab. It's called icing your injury or whatever it is, heating it, stretching it, performing rehab on it. There's 1,000 ways around it. I had my tooth pulled last week, Wade, which is painful as hell. Yeah. And this dentist told me he's never seen somebody in his 30 years in the business go without the painkiller prescription he wanted to write me, even though I told him I'm an addict and I can't take them. He kept trying to push it on me. He literally was pushing it on me because of the pain I was about to be in, right? So, Wade, I told him, I'll bet you I'm your first one, you know, that goes without it. And lo and behold, it was painful as hell. I had 2 molars pulled and had to go for a couple days without these molars before I got them replaced, and it was painful as hell. But that said, for everyone out there listening, it was nothing that 2 extra strength ibuprofen and 2 extra strength Tylenols couldn't handle. And it was tolerable. It was painful, but it was tolerable, is my point. And that's what these guys need to understand. Pain is what it is. It's pain, right? That's why we do what we do. We're supposed to be quote unquote tough guys because we're wrestlers. Well, then let's be tough and let's not use this crutch that we call painkillers and other drugs to get around it and just deal with the pain. There's so many wrestlers over the years that have been able to do that and not become hooked on these pills and find other ways around it. I'm telling you right now, super strength ibuprofen and super strength Tylenol did the trick for me. When this dentist was telling me there's no way in hell I'm going to be able to go without these Percocets he wanted me to take, you know, and I was able to do it. So that's just a quick snippet example of it. But my back spasms and other injuries I accrued over the years, I could have worked around those with other you know, means. And if I needed to take a pill, I could have used a Tylenol or an ibuprofen if need be. There's no need for me to have taken those painkillers. And on the opposite end, there's somas that people get hooked on. Guys, you're hitting the brake and the gas at the same damn time. Imagine your engine seizing in your car, right? That's what's happening to athletes all around the world, is they're taking these uppers, the hydro and oxycodones, and then they combine them by taking a sedative or a sleeping pill agent, if you will, like a soma, which is a severe muscle relaxer, and other sleeping pills, and now you're hitting the brake, okay? So now you're hitting the gas and the brake at the same time within that same 24-hour time frame. What the hell do you think is going to happen eventually? Your heart is the thing that's going to cease. And that's what ends up happening more times than not to athletes and musicians and entertainers worldwide. So my advice is stay the hell away from them. You can get around injuries. That's just a rationalization to use them and get high and mask other stuff you've got going on in your life too, for that matter.
Matt, I appreciate that advice and a thorough answer, and I hope it's heeded. I mean, like you said, sometimes, I mean, you do think some people who are in pain don't really know what they're getting themselves into, but they enjoy the high. And
no question.
Yeah. And it's so, it's just, I mean, it's, if you've been through it, you speak with credibility about it. And I just think we should leave it at that. Cause you don't want people, who haven't been through it necessarily to act like they know what it's like. You do. You are now coping with it in a different way because you know the price that you paid for coping with it the way that, frankly, doctors pushed on you, including a dentist recently.
In a way, there's guys out, I'm sorry, wait, there are people, anybody in the walk of life, not just wrestlers and athletes and famous people or whatever, but no, everybody that might have a surgery that was done. My cousin just had this spinal surgery done where she needed to take these painkillers, and that's what they were put on this planet for that scenario. That's an extreme situation or case, and because she doesn't have a chemical imbalance like I do, or an addictive personality like I do, she's allowed to take her one pill and then be okay. So as far as wrestlers go, I just think you're creating something that could be down the road very harmful. So if you stay away from it, just do it.
Give us a phone call here on PW Torch Livecast, interview Thursday on April 28th, 2016. The phone number that you can reach us at is 646-721-9828. Push 1 on your touchtone phone if you want to join us. We are here 6 days a week, and actually this week, 7 days straight. Mondays post-Raw at 11:30 Eastern, about 25 minutes after Raw ends. James Caldwell, often with Pat McNeil, analyze Raw and take your phone calls for an hour or longer. Tuesdays, I'm here analyzing Raw, most often with Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, but also a rotation of other co-hosts. Wednesday, Pat McNeil hosts the show Wednesday evenings at a new time with special guests. And this is Interview Thursday that I host at 1 Eastern live. You can stream it or listen on demand later. And then Fridays, Bruce Mitchell, Torch senior columnist over 25 years, joined by Travis Bryant of the PW Torch East Coast Cast, which, by the way, is available at eastcoastcast.com. Different flavor, different pace. Rating, not PG. Check it out if you haven't yet. That's eastcoastcast.com. And then Saturdays, Jim Valley with a new show this year, Saturday Morning Wrestling, the PW Torch Livecast at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific time, with legendary guests such as Lance Russell, the Grappler, Len Denton, and many other big names. He has connections and a great knowledge base, and he loves talking old school wrestling. And that can be 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Check it out, Saturday Morning Wrestling, and participate with phone calls on all of these programs. And then Sunday night, After Payback, live postgame show at 11:30 Eastern. James Caldwell and Greg Parks breaking down the show with your phone calls and emails. And we absolutely encourage you to participate, listen live, and if you can't, then listen on demand at pwtorchlivecast.com. Let's go to our first phone call, area code 801, and then on deck 305. 801, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
This is Derek from Utah.
Hey, Derek. How you doing? Good to hear from you again.
I'm good. Just a question for Matt. I heard some of his comments regarding the big man style, and I've also heard Kevin Nash describe the big man style in a similar way. And I wonder, you know, in today's environment where a lot of the guys who employ the big man style, whether it be an older guy like Mark Henry or even a newer guy like Baron Corbin, and you compare that to the judgments they get from wrestling journalists and get from fans, and then you look at big guys who wrestle a more athletic style. I look at guys like Moose and Ring of Honor, or even a guy like Kevin Owens, and how they get more celebrated and more credit as good workers. I wonder if Matt Morgan is afraid that in this environment the big man style might be a lost art in the next 5 to 10 years.
Matt, before I answer, Derek, I want to say that I picked up on your tone when you said the term wrestling journalist. I just want to say I picked up on that. Go ahead, Matt.
That's awesome. You know what? That was like the conundrum I dealt with when I was wrestling, especially early on. And not so much worrying about, like, I'm not just saying this to sound cool or whatever, but not because journalists were ranking my matches or something, but because I, as an athlete, I'm very proud that I'm athletic, and I would like to display that. So, but I will say this, though. I don't consider Kevin Owens a big man. I consider Mark Henry a big man, Big Show a big man, Kevin Nash a big man. my cutoff, I don't know what the height and weight requirement is, but Kevin Owens, I think, works a style that works for what he needs to be doing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a body guy, right?
Yeah.
So he's got to go out there and do something different, and he's my favorite wrestler right now, if I'm being honest. He's my favorite guy to watch right now on TV. Huge Kevin Owens fan. But wouldn't consider him a big guy. If I was in the ring with him, I wouldn't be doing no-sell tackle spots with him where he hits the ropes and then I hit the ropes. I wouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
He'd be creating the movement around me. But that said, that's the tough spot. So someone like Corbin right now, he's coming up right now. He's, in my opinion, in the in-between stage of what I would classify as a big man and someone that could, you know, move around the ring a little bit and show what he can do. Big Cass is the one that's going to have that problem, in my opinion, because he is being booked at 7 feet tall, right? So he's going to have to work like a giant and big man, if you will. But I think it depends on the wrestler. If Kevin Owens is going out there and doing all that stuff to impress writers, you know, then that's what he's doing. But I myself didn't do that. But then again, I was doing it at a different time and age. I mean, I read The Torch, obviously, when I was coming up, to know about what was happening, about what was being said, because you do need to have some sort of pulse as to what people are saying about your style and your matches and things like that. That is, let's be honest, that is somewhat important to know, especially back then. Now it's even more, in my opinion, prevalent and important to know, because now there are people being put in key positions that they'll deny it to their blue in the face, but I'm sorry, they're reading what you guys are writing, and they're going out there, and sometimes they're booking a show around it. So you should feel very empowered, Wade Keller.
Well, I do want to say I don't like broad brushstrokes. I think that I go against the conventional wisdom. I think that I take pride in not perpetuating some of the IWC conventional wisdom of what makes a great match. I'm the one who's spent a lot of time on this show preaching against the This Is Awesome chance and decrying decrying ladder matches and saying I don't think that wrestlers should take that number of bumps in a year, much less in one match. But if you're going to do it in a match,
chair shots, you're one of the first ones about chair shots too.
Absolutely. I groaned at the thumbtack spot with Robert Roode on Impact Tuesday night. I mean, you know, I just don't like broad brushstrokes. I there's people on staff I argue with every week about some of these fundamentals. We have different points of view. So in that respect, I've actually really tried to preach appreciation for the fact that different styles work in wrestling, and it's important to have different styles, and it's also important to not have big men trying to keep up with smaller guys, but it's also important for smaller guys to learn the art of telling a story and being efficient with the big bumps they take. Jim Ross last week on this show, Matt, talked about Apollo Crews and how he thinks he's doing too many athletic spots because he's kind of one of those in-between guys on the smaller side of in-between. He's not a big guy, but he kind of wrestles smaller than he is, and he's doing a lot of acrobatic spots, almost kind of like showing off, hey, look what I can do, as opposed to this is helping me win a match. And Ross's concern, Matt, was knee injuries, that he's putting a lot of wear and tear in his knee with that musculature. Any thoughts on that?
Can I just say something? Yes, definitely. Great example right there. Again, put him in the ring with me, and he's a midget, right? I'm not trying to be a smartass or funny, but that guy comes up to my belly button, let's be honest. But he's super muscular, like a Bobby Lashley build almost, on a smaller height frame, right? And he's whipping out all these crazy moves. And I, as an athlete, I'm not going to lie, I'm very impressed by him. That said, that's me as an athlete. Me as a fan, and this is the main point of what I'm saying here. It's going to take him. He's still growing and figuring out who the hell he is as a man first. And once he figures that out, then he's going to figure out who he is as his character. And unfortunately, they don't give these guys the proper time and repetitions to get those F-ups, if you will, out of their system to figure out who they are in that ring. Yeah. And what JR is talking about is, don't just do a move for the sake of doing a move because, hey, check me out, I can do a triple Lindy backflip. It's, I'm this character, punch, punch, kick, kick, whatever it is that he's doing. And then in between those moves is the most important part of a wrestler's storytelling. That's when we get to know who Stone Cold was by his facials and getting on all fours and talking smack to his opponent after he did whatever move he just executed. It wasn't the move or the neck breaker or whatever it was that Stone Cold did. It was his body language, his facials, and his character, the zest that he had for his character through his body language in between those moves that made him scream. superstar scream, this is who Stone Cold is. There was no question as to who he was.
Yeah.
And that's what these guys are not getting enough time with, to figuring out who they are. So, great, he can do all those moves, but he's got to be able to figure out in between those moves to put his spin on to who he is as a character through his body language, through whether it's him talking smack, whether it's not talking smack. He seems like a really good guy, so I don't know how you – I don't know what he needs to do to figure that out. I don't want to say being a good guy isn't marketable anymore, but it kind of isn't, unfortunately, in 2016 sometimes, unless they do a ton of interviews with him doing, like, goodwill-type situations, I guess. I don't know. He's in a tough spot. He really is, because he's right in between.
I think you can be a good guy in wrestling today, but you got to have an edge, and you have to seem like you're street tough. That there's that you stand for something, but you're willing to fight hard for that. I mean, the criticism of Apollo Crews is he just smiling too much? You know, he's just smiling too broadly. But Derek, do you have any follow up for us?
No, I think you guys hit on a lot of the same pitfalls that I've fallen to. And as a wrestling journalist, Wade, what I think myself is, you know, I hear some of the comments, and I saw everyone praise Moose for everything he did in the ring, and I was falling into that pitfall where I'm like, wow, Moose is so good. And then I watched Baron Corbin, who's the same size with a lot of the same background, and I noticed all the little things he does, where he does his entrance, and he turns his head so slightly with his nose in the air and kind of projects that heel persona, and a lot of the other things he does, or in the middle of a match, instead of rushing after he hits something, which he thinks is impressive, after rushing and like putting his hands in the air like boomy, he just kind of slowly moves his hands in the air. Once again, that nose is up towards the sky, and I was like, man,
great catch.
Is Moose better than Baron Corbin? And I just thought to myself, no. Baron Corbin does all of the things that are so much easier, that get such a bigger reaction for a guy his size that's more effective. And so,
great catch. Wait, that's a great catch he just caught.
Yeah.
That's a great. I'm surprised to hear you say that, buddy. That was a very good catch. Good job.
Thanks, Derek.
But, thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
And I'll listen to the rest of the show. Appreciate your time.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. All right, we're going to go to another short break. When we come back, more phone calls and more conversation with Matt Morgan. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the livecast. Thank you. All right, we are back live on PW Torch Livecast with Matt Morgan, former WWE and TNA wrestler, and we are talking current events. Matt, you still follow, obviously, WWE and NXT. I don't remember getting into it with you 3 weeks ago. Do you follow other shows on a weekly basis also? Do you watch them?
No, I honestly, I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have time. I got a two-year-old I'm chasing around now, right?
So
I catch... NXT is awesome. I can watch it on my phone, you know, and that's generally what I do. That's my first show. My first favorite show is by far NXT, and then obviously I'll watch Raw. But I haven't been able to catch too much SmackDown. Definitely haven't been able to catch up on Impact either, really. I know what's going on, but I haven't been able to really watch it.
Well, the NXT, one thing that I just I love about NXT is every few weeks or every couple months, heck, every time I watch the TV show to a certain degree, they do something that I feel like hasn't been done correctly in a long time in this industry, but I watched and studied and appreciated other promoters and other bookers do in wrestling history, things that are timeless. And I've argued on this show for 6.5 years and in the Pro Wrestling Torch Newsletter for 28 years. There's things that we've seen go away that were really smart and help draw money and help keep a consistent narrative and allow the wrestlers to tell stories without overexerting themselves, which can lead to what we talked about at the top of the show with a reliance on painkillers. I just think NXT does so many things right. I love the house show title change last week. Now, Todd Martin brought up on the VIP audio show that I host with him on Wednesdays, The Fix with Todd Martin, that now the title change at a house show might have been inspired somewhat by the fact that there were going to be some other happenings at the NXT TV tapings that I won't get into spoilers on that might have caused them to want to do something at a house show. But I love house show title changes. NXT's trying to draw money. They want the fan experience at house shows to be the best. They don't want them to seem like an exhibition that doesn't count. So now, Matt, for 2 years or longer, every world title match at an NXT house show is going to have more of an edge, more fan investment, because those fans are going to know that a title changed hands, not on a takeover special, not at a TV taping, but at a house show, just like the one that they're at. And you know, you can only do that so often. I don't think there should be a lot of title changes, period, and you do want to save them mostly for pay-per-views if you're WWE. But that's another one of those things. When you watch NXT, what jumps out to you that makes you like the product so much, in particular, that stands out as maybe different than what the conventional way to promote has been since a Monday Night War?
We've got the coverage they also had once the title switch happened. That's another benefit of being in 2016 with all the different platforms now out there as far as media and social media goes, you know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was everywhere. I was plastered everywhere about Joe's win. It was great.
Yep.
I can't say enough good things about it, Wade. Everything you just said, I agree 1,000% with. I love the fact that you obviously see so many of the things that they'll do and at least give the old tip of the hat to, you know, past promoters and bookers who have done similar type, you know, things that's working really well for NXT. And I appreciate that you always give, you know, you'll bring it up at least and keep it alive. You know what I mean? Which is awesome. Cause a lot of these new fans won't even know where it's coming from, which is good in a way because it's brand new and it's exciting stuff that they're seeing for the first time because they haven't seen old tapes or old Memphis or whatever have you, or, you know, so that's awesome. But the show is just, come on, it just speaks for itself. It's so simple to understand. And there's people that will detract, not many, but will say, oh, it's only, you know, what, an hour-long show. It's it's still, at the end of the day, this easily can still be done on a much larger scale, and I hope it is. I hope this is more than proof of what they need to bring it up top. And not just bring the talents up top that are getting over down there and then somehow messing it up for them. I mean, take the entire style, everything, from how everything is done down there and bring it up. It's working. Yes. I'm sorry. And it's working in a major way. Let's be honest. There's no way in hell they can say that to the blue in the face. I'm sorry. There's no way in hell that they first set out to do NXT. You know, okay, that we're going to want to go on the road. We're going to want to have this show that actually gets more of a reaction than Raw does on most weeks, and we want this show to be seen as the bigger show and the more exciting show. There's no way that they set out for that. Right. They did not. But it's a phenomenon. They've done things the right way. And if that was their intent when they first started, wow. You know, kudos for a job well done and the patience of standing the test to get through the time to get to this point.
I think what they stumbled upon, Matt, is a style of promoting that the people at NXT believed in, and they did what promoters used to do before Raw versus Nitro. And, you know, VIP members are able to read back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, and last week we just put up a cover story that involved quotes that from Vince McMahon, when I talked to Vince McMahon at the beginning, in the early stages of the Monday Night War, and Vince was talking about Scott Hall negotiating with WCW. and giving his notice. And fascinating quotes from Vince. I mean, really cool stuff to read in these back issues that I'm putting up. I put two more up today, by the way, with more. The latest headline was Kevin Nash, Diesel, giving his notice to WWE and his intent to jump on the same week that Johnny B. Badd, Mark Mero, and the Steiners were headed the other direction. And in that back issue, I've got a Torch Talk with Mark Mero, Johnny B. Badd, talking about that decision. And a great quote, a great pullout quote from him that's hilarious about him in his pre-wrestling days that I'll just leave for VIP members to read. It is hilarious. But my point in this, not to get too off track, is Vince McMahon back then decried what he ended up having to do, which was booking his shows at a different pace and feuds at a different pace and giving away big matches and having his top stars wrestle on TV a lot. And giving away matches between named wrestlers and named tag teams prematurely to try to compete with Nitro. And what he found is, wow, this led to a boom period. And so I think a lot of people thought, well, it must be this approach that made everyone tune in. And it got out of hand. And when there was no longer any competition, a lot of those wise, sage-like policies that Vince McMahon was preaching 20 years ago to me in the Torch newsletter interview I did with him, he's not gone back to. And NXT, without the pressure of USA Network and NBC Universal and TV ratings, and just the inertia of, well, this is the way we do things, we're making a lot of money as a corporation, let's not mess with it, NXT was able kind of off to the side, off the radar, just to have smart people do what they thought was right. And what happened is, on a smaller scale, but way above what anybody predicted, it's turned into a product that for people who do watch it, and it's not the crowd, it's not the size of audience that watches Raw, but those who do watch it love it. And they are into the characters, and they pop for the main event matches. They feel a real connection to the wrestlers that the main roster doesn't produce at that same level. So, I mean, there's a lot more I can say about NXT, and I do all the time. But, Matt, it really is, minus the economic pressures and the inertia of this is the way we've been doing things for 15 years, it really has become something special. And I think, like you said, an example for others to tap into and follow outside of those bad habits that came out of the Monday Night War.
I wonder where we'll be 5-10 years from now as far as media goes or television goes.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like you look at a Netflix and you watch how they're able to put an entire season of House of Cards out, you know, not week to week to make you tune in week to week, but just one lump sum, right?
Yep.
All season, they put up the entire season. I wonder, like, they're obviously being paid, okay? They're obviously making their money income that they've got to make to do something like that. So I'm wondering if we're at a point in 5 or 10 years where the USA allure isn't as big as it once appears, maybe like right now. And they're able to make the money on the back end via advertising and things like that through their network once they start opening up that a little bit more.
Yeah.
And once I think that happens, you know, that's when we're going to get the best of the best. And not, you watch the WWE Network, I'm not just giving them a free plug. I have no intention to wrestle ever again. The network is awesome. It speaks for itself. It's awesome. And to be able to have advertisers link into it and pay for some of the things and eventually have Raw just be on that, I think so many of the problems will be, you know?
I agree.
Or they take the example that's being used now and take a risk and say, look, this NXT thing is working. The way we're doing it, we're slowing things down. We're reprogramming viewers that actually, let's be honest, we all want to be reprogrammed. Some of us that watched it over the Monday Night Wars. We don't want to see crashed, you know, TV anymore. We want to be reprogrammed and go back to what we used to see as kids, right?
Yeah.
So we have us that want that. And then you have newer fans that don't know any better. So you're easily going to be, in my opinion, reconditioned if you do it. And that's why I think NXT works. And that's what I think they need to do with Raw. That's all.
Yeah. I'm with you, Matt. All right, let's go to our next phone call here. Area code 305. You're on the live cast. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, guys. DJ Miami from Miami.
Yep, good to hear from you. What have you got for us?
I'm a VIP member, so it's pretty good. I got two quick questions because I know you guys are running out of time. I'm a big fan of Matt. Let me ask you about when you're doing the biker thing. I know that, like, Gangland never came out. Do you think when Gangland came out more, do you think you would have had a more of a push? Because that, I mean, like Fast and Furious. When Fast and Furious, everybody did their cars. So when Gangland came out, everybody loved Gangland. It was, so I'd think get a big, better push, and you would get a lot of people. And my second part was, is that I know the Angels came up to Hogan when he was doing his thing. Did they ever come up to you and say, hey, put the jacket on or something? Because I know you were doing that for, you know, you're a big dude, and you look just like one of those guys. And that's my first thing.
Yeah. Well, first of all, about the biker gimmick, I never did one, so thanks for paying attention. But I digress. I have no idea what you're talking about, if I'm being honest. Sorry, bro.
I didn't either, so I thought I was missing something. DJ, what's going on, DJ?
Well, I thought Matt Morgan was the biker guy, the big 7 foot. He had a biker gimmick.
No. All right, DJ's a regular, but he gets a fail today. He gets a fail grade today.
No worries.
I'm looking under Pat McNeil's sound effects here. Let's see if there's... All right, DJ, we'll give you another chance next time. On that note, I actually got to cut to the final break of the hour, and we'll come right back after this, and I've got some emails, and I have things I want to ask Matt about, more about NXT, and Payback coming up on Sunday night, also in current WWE storyline. So stay tuned for that on the other side of this. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the every single day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: the Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, the Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. It takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. All right, we are back on the PW Torch livecast live at 1:45 Eastern, Thursday, April 28th. Don't forget, Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant waiting for your phone calls, or just stream live and listen, or listen on demand later. They air tomorrow, 7 Eastern, Friday night, 7 Eastern, live at pwtorchlivecast.com. Matt, we got an email question here from Jason Thiessen of Montevideo, Minnesota. He says, I think this would be a good time to ask this question, seeing your guest, Matt Morgan, is a big dude. If I know Roman isn't as tall as Matt, but I'd like to, scroll here, but I'd like to know what you and Matt thought about how much Roman Reigns sells in his matches and the length of time he sells for. This seems to go back to the main event of the pay-per-view before WrestleMania when he wrestled Daniel Bryan. I'm a massive Daniel Bryan fan, but to me, if they wanted to get Roman over as a threat to Brock Lesnar, why would they have him get beat down almost the entire match against a guy much smaller than him? I thought that match was booked completely backwards. I can see why in his match against Brock, why he'd sell for the amount of time he did, but when it comes full circle, all the way to this past week on Raw in the main event of a show that was almost at the three-hour mark against a guy as dull and boring as Alberto Del Rio. Why have him get beat down for almost the entire match only to have him hit his spear and Superman punch to win? Why doesn't WWE book this guy as a big badass ass-kicker? Instead, I feel he wrestles a match much like I'd expect someone a lot smaller, like Styles or Sami Zayn. The crowd would actually care about the comeback of Zayn or Styles because they're invested in those characters. But nobody wants to sit through 10 minutes of Reigns getting beat down and then see him make his comeback, especially at the end of a 3-hour and 10-minute show. I feel like a shorter, more dominant match would help Reigns. There's no reason for a guy like Del Rio to have a match that competitive against the world champion. And as if that question wasn't long enough, he sent a follow-up, so I want to get this into Jason. Or Matt, Jason said, just a quick add-on. I quickly became a fan of Matt's when I was living in Louisville and went to the OVW Wrestling School. He was one of my favorite part of every Wednesday's OVW show, but what caught my eye was working out at the Powerhouse Gym. I'd be working out at the gym while observing guys like Randy Orton, who would be there for hours, talking up the female staff, while Matt would walk in, head right for the bench, load the bar up with as many 45s that could fit on it, bench that a couple times, and then leave. I was in awe of his size and strength. I might be remembering the amount of hours Matt actually hit in the gym wrong. That was about 12 years ago. Anyway, Matt, fun email. What do you have to say?
That's awesome. and very accurate powerhouse story. He hits nail on the head, actually. Less is more with Reigns, okay? Especially when we know he's not getting over the way they want him to. This is to answer his question, and you already know what this answer is, Wade. They're desperately trying to get what we call sympathy for their baby face. And what they're not acknowledging or realizing when they had him sell so much for Daniel Bryan is that they realize that they're catering to the fans a little bit, to the smarter fans that want to see Daniel Bryan in successful situations. But what they're idiotic about is we didn't always want to see Daniel Bryan beating everybody up. We wanted to see him on the cell and make a triumphant comeback and then take the victory. Not the opposite way around. But nonetheless, they got it backwards. And Reigns should be wrestling still to this day, shorter matches, and be... Their logic is right as far as wanting their babyface to sell more and get sympathy. But what's not working is they're doing it backwards now, where I don't think it's too far removed too much where he can be a babyface one day, but it's not working right now. So don't put him in sales scenarios, because when no one's chanting his name to come back, it's just making it worse. It's making it just the no crowd reaction is just more deafening, actually, than booing him, in my opinion, is. You know?
Yeah.
To give no reaction is the worst reaction, right? So don't put him in sell scenarios. And plus, you hit on this, and I started looking for it more, actually, Wade, was he makes these little smart alecky, smart-ass, smirky faces, and when he's doing that on the cell, it doesn't work right now. And when that match versus Lesnar, by proxy, that was a great idea as far as that's the one guy you have him sell for. Yes, have him get his ass handed, you know, by Brock the Beast Lesnar, the whole match. That should have worked with just about anybody else. But because he has that confident smile and that smirk, it could come across as cocky. And I thought it did come across as cocky at times during that Mania match. And that's why I don't think it worked. But he's still figuring out who the hell he is as well. You know, he's young. He's still figuring out who he is as a man.
Yeah.
I can't not tell you guys that enough. You'll always hear me say that, because once I figured out who I was as a man, that's when I could start putting elements of that to that blueprint persona. Like, I believe I'm the best 7-foot athlete there is on this planet. I really, truly believe that, as arrogant as that is. And instead of being, oh gosh, oh golly, and humble about it, I was like, fuck it. Excuse my language. F everybody. If you can't do the things I do in here, well, tough, keep up. That's your job. As I found that out much later in my career with TNA, and I wish I had that when I was in WWE, that confidence, but it was just figuring that out. And that's what he's still doing. So there's so many elements still here at play. But to answer his question, he needs shorter matches. He needs to be gutting people and keep it simple. He needs to be just, not to be corny, but reigning supreme and short, succinct, style. That's it.
And if he was drawing ratings and they were in a wrestling war, then by God, you got to do what you got to do. You know, I mean, Steve Austin was in 17 segments on one episode of Raw because they were trying to – they knew they had a hot act. He drew ratings. They wanted to keep people from tuning to Nitro. Mm-hmm. And Steve Austin was the answer to losing the ratings battle. That's not Roman Reigns right now. Like you say, he's still learning who he is. I think you're right. He's 31 years old. He's still learning who he is in real life. And it comes through on air. He is so much more well-equipped to be a heel. But if he's going to be a babyface world champion, have him stand – with Renee Young, with that belt over his shoulder, and acting like he is ruling that kingdom, but he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to get suited up to wrestle every week because, I mean, again, we talk about NXT doing things old school. You know, Ric Flair, Nick Bockwinkel, Hulk Hogan during the '80s when there was a different style of wrestling pre-Attitude Era. And it worked, and it worked for a reason. The champions were above having to suit up and wrestle every week, a meaningless match. I was ticked off Monday night, and I ranted about it this week. They didn't do anything to build up Del Rio. You know, they announced a match, and that was it. I mean, we had no reason to be emotionally invested. We had no context to what Del Rio's goal was. What would a victory mean to him? What would a victory to Roman Reigns mean? How do they feel about each other? None of that was there. It's just... it's so infuriating because that's a match, and Jason doesn't like Del Rio. I think higher of Del Rio than Jason did in his email. Del Rio against Reigns should be a big deal. That should be treated as a big deal, not, okay, let's have Del Rio methodically beat down Roman for 12 minutes to fill TV time in this terribly long show where we got to do anything we can to fill it up. It's not serving Roman Reigns, and therefore it's not serving the world championship, and therefore it's not serving the fans. So it's a mess, and Reigns shouldn't be wrestling long matches on TV, period. I mean, that's my take. Maybe once a year when you really have something that just comes together for some reason.
Yeah, and it's called when Brock Lesnar's whipping his butt the whole match. That's the time for the long match. No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I agree. I agree. Yeah. Hey, really quick, I just wanted to say something.
Yeah.
You brought up the VIP membership before. It doesn't sound like a cheap plug, but I'm being honest. Jim Cornette used to tell us back in the day when I first started in OVW that to write down all the finishes to our matches, because later in our career, we're going to run out of ideas, or the booking committee, you can't always, in Jimmy's way of saying it, you know, curse-laden, you know, way of saying it, you know, you can't always depend on the writers and bookers, you know, nowadays. So guys, if you have your own journal, Chris Jericho did this, I believe Lance Storm may have done this, but you write down your own finishes and what you did in some of your matches, you'll have it to go back to years down the road when you need a new finish that might be, that hasn't been done in a while, and what is old is new again, right? So I didn't have that when I started, when he said this. Like, I was brand new to the business. I didn't have any indie matches, nothing. I got signed right to a developmental. So instead, what I would do is I had a VIP membership, and what I would do is I would write down all the various finishes that I would see with the bigger big men, ways of guys like the Kevin Nash when he was Diesel in WWF, or Undertaker in WWF, Kane when he first came in, as how they would, when they were trying to keep them as monsters, how would they lose their matches? Like, what was done to work around that, along with writing the finishes of my own matches in OVW at that time, too. So, like, that's just another good thing about that VIP membership, is that you could go back and you could see so many damn things that happen in the history of wrestling. And for some of the newer fans, what's awesome about it is you'll start seeing something nowadays, I think within this year and in the next 10 years, I would say, it's going to be brand new to you, but if you go back and you watch, you'll see where it was originated from and where it really came from, and it's really cool to watch if you can on YouTube as well, or the network, because you'll see how the real pros did it when it was really executed at its highest.
I appreciate the plug, Matt, and it's hard to get an edge. And if you want to be the guy who knows more than your friends about wrestling, it's tough to get an edge. There's a lot of free stuff out there. There's nothing like what comes with a VIP membership. I mean, in terms of the current content we produce, got the top analysts who know their stuff. They know their history. They watch they watch thoroughly what is out there, and they consume they read the books, and they watch the DVDs and the specials, and they talk to people in the business. It gives you an edge if you want to know more than your buddies do, and it's not about the current scene, but also use that knowledge of what we were writing about in real time. That VIP membership gives you that edge, and I know to some people it's kind of nice to be able to show up your friends every once in a while who are the know-it-all. I've tried to think of a good catchphrase, Matt, for selling the VIP membership, and I haven't come up with it yet, but a VIP membership will help you humble that know-it-all friend who thinks because he's on the internet, he knows more than everybody else. And the VIP membership is kind of your secret weapon.
How about this? Here's your catchphrase right now.
Yeah.
Mark Henry versus Matt Morgan, Ohio Valley Wrestling, 2002. Looking for a finish. It worked for them. Stealing Andre the Giant versus Big John Studd finish from our VIPs. That's where I got it from. And one of our Summer Scissor Series finishes. Andre versus Studd, but I read it on the VIP. I saw the match, but the VIP broke down the dichotomy of it all, of the backstage stuff and everything like that, which was awesome to read as a younger wrestler. But you know what your real demo is, Wade, for that? Is the NXT crowd. Those fans want so much more.
Yeah.
They want to know everything there is to know about it. Those are the ones that should really be subscribing.
Yeah, I mean, to be able to pull a quote out from Vince McMahon commenting to the Torch about Hall and Nash jumping, and you know, from it's the issue we put up last week where Vince talked about...
I saw that one.
It's fascinating what Vince was telling me exclusively at a very pivotal time in the Monday Night War. And by the way, I did not want this to turn into a VIP plug, so I'm sorry for those who are rolling their eyes at this, but hopefully there's some information in the midst of this plug that's useful and entertaining too. Bruce Mitchell and I, on a regular basis, go on the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show for VIP members, go through these back issues, and we talk about what was said and what we wrote and where we right or wrong, and add a little more perspective with the 2020 hindsight to some of the stories and interviews and backstage tidbits in those back issues. So it's really fun. Anyway, I want to get to another email. This is about the women's division right now. This is from Alan. Mm-hmm. He says, Wade and Matt, I'm reaching out to you from Zimbabwe. My question is directed at both of you, hoping to hear your thoughts on this. Seeing WWE move on out of the Divas era into a more pro-women's wrestling era. By the way, Greg Parks in this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter did a full-page article on this, on the transition of the women's era. Do you think TNA will do the same anytime soon in terms of no longer branding their female talent as Knockouts and perhaps replacing the Knockouts Championship with the TNA Women's Championship while continuing to promote women's wrestling? I just feel that even though WWE is moving out of the Divas era, they are still some distance away from completely embracing women's wrestling, but TNA has been doing their best to promote and showcase women's wrestling, so it wouldn't be a positive step forward for them if TNA moved out of the Knockouts era. I'm going to answer this first, Matt, and throw to you, because I have one or two things to say. Divas is demeaning. The connotation of it is... high maintenance, and being prissy and high maintenance. It didn't connotate athlete and work ethic and competition. So I thought that it was demeaning. It came at an era where the way to become a diva in WWE was WWE producers bringing in a bunch of models and having them do jump rope while trying to chew bubblegum. It was insulting and demeaning, and it was attached to that. Knockouts does not have that connotation to me. You know what has a worse connotation than Knockouts Championship? TNA Women's Championship, because that is way worse. So, Alan, I appreciate your question and the spirit. I'm with you in spirit. But changing something from Knockout, which at least has an athletic comp, you know, that could be the name of a boxing show or an MMA show, not UFC Knockouts. Changing it to TNA Women's Championship, given what TNA stands for, that's a step backward. So I just wanted to sneak that in, Matt. But other than that, I really do like what they're doing with women's wrestling in this industry right now. NXT, WWE, TNA less so, but in a way they're the pioneers of even though they've got the, you know, rubbing your crotch against the rope and the camera angles of the butt wiggles during the ring entrance. I mean, I get why they do that. They're not perfect in terms of respecting the women as athletes, but there's no doubt in their history that there have been long stretches where they were doing more for women's wrestling than anybody else in this country. So there's my answer, Matt. Thank you for holding tight. I'm curious to hear yours.
I don't want to add much more to that. And then I'm glad you added that last anecdote, because when I was with TNA, I'm telling you right now, our women's division was monstrous. Yeah. It was awesome. Every girl at one point could go in that ring. And people, you guys, everyone would talk about it, the Gail Kim versus Kongs and, you know, the matchups like that. But the beautiful people, every single one of them could go once that bell sounded. Between Sarah Stott, there's so many of them. People that we couldn't even get on TV. Like I just said, Sarah Stock sitting there, who should have been on TV every single damn week. You know, Taylor Wilde, there's so many wrestlers that we had as women that were so damn good.
And I'm glad you did at least add that in there at the end, because we were smoking WWE as far as women's wrestling goes.
Absolutely. And I get, I mean, I think that you can be sexy and have that sex appeal that the large male demographic is certainly enjoys having as part of a pro wrestling show. You can absolutely have that part of a show, but not have the women look like they're auditioning for a moonlighting job at a nightclub. And, you know, Bruce Mitchell has written eloquently about this last year when talking about Charlotte and the way for her to present herself. Sometimes sexy is being, as Steve Austin would say, just being badass, looking good and being badass. You don't need to show off the moves that you practiced on the pole that you installed at home when you were. It just comes across as tawdry. You know, I mean, it does. It just comes across as tawdry sometimes. WWE's moving away from that. They can still have sexy women who are badass
Lita's the embodiment of that badass term. Lita. Take the moonsault out of the picture too. Her body language, how she walked out to the ring, was badass. That's why she was sexy.
Yes, absolutely. Great example. Okay, let's go to, I believe this is Colin from New Jersey. Colin, is this you?
Yes, it is. How are you, Matt?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, Matt, how are you? Nice to talk
Hanging
to you.
Hanging in there, buddy.
Jackson's doing good?
Yes, sir. He's doing great. Thank you for asking again, man. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome. So, as usual, I have my three questions for you. First one, Matt. How long do you and Wade think it will take WWE to draw over a 2.5 consistently?
Can I take that really quickly?
Yeah, go ahead.
I promise. There are so many elements now, guys, that are different. I know we have to talk about the ratings and it's important, but there are so many, there's 1,000 more moving pieces to this now. I'm not saying to defend any of these companies, but it's not the same thing anymore. People's attention spans are shorter. They're on, we have 1,000 different ways to watch shows now. I love NXT. I don't say I sit there and watch it live. Because something else might be going on at that moment, because I know I can go back and watch it on demand. I like to think that's the casual and average viewer's styling habits of watching TV. I don't have any programmed must-see sit-down at ATM on a Monday night or Thursday night or Friday night TV anymore as far as sitcoms go, and back in the day when Seinfeld, or to date myself, when Cheers was on and shows like that.
Yep.
So the Cosby's, there is no more of that.
Bob Newhart,
so, like, the
show.
Ratings,
I love
you
Lucy.
Have to use it as a gauge. No, now where you're getting yourself.
No, I was not watching I Love Lucy on CBS when it first aired. I'm not that. I'm not. Don't go back.
So, you know what I mean? Though it's so hard to determine all these moving parts to it. You know, so I think it's going to go the opposite way. Quite frankly, I don't think we'll see it consistently do that one day. I think it's going the opposite way. I think it's going to go all being streamlined or it's going to be on the network altogether one day. And I think that it'll be very successful too.
I think that what matters, Kylan, is a year-to-year rating, because on-demand programming was around a year ago. YouTube was around a year ago. The competition of Monday Night Football or whatever was around a year ago. So year-to-year ratings matter. I don't think it matters. I don't think it's fair to compare how many people watch Raw live on Monday nights now compared to 1998.
Right.
I mean, you can bring it up. It's an interesting fact, but it doesn't mean WWE's doing, by definition, doing an awful job. But I think when you compare ratings to last year and the year before, when you compare ratings to last month and last week and what is the trend line, there's relevance there. And I think WWE is making excuses if they act like a 2.8, 2.6, 2.4, 2.2 trend over 4 weeks is nothing to worry about, because, well, we had 1 million YouTube hits. That's not what NBC Universal that was not the pitch WWE made to NBC Universal. Hey, we'll give you diminished ratings because TV has changed, and we'll make 1/10 of the amount of money on YouTube, and that's how people will watch our product because they have short attention spans, but please give us record revenue for a TV deal when you renew us. That was not their pitch. and so I hold them to their own words. Their pitch 2 years ago was, we are DVR proof. We are live programming. We are sports. They spent a decade telling us they're episodic weekly programming. They're sports entertainment.
Yeah.
And then what did they do when it came time for renewal? They saw the deal that soccer got. They saw the deal that other major league sports got, and they said, the money is in marketing ourselves as sport. So then, for about 6 months, they called themselves a sport. They were DVR-proof. We're live. People are going to engage with us socially. They don't want to know outcomes ahead of time. They won't be able to avoid it. So I'm holding WWE to that standard. However, it's in a way, it's somewhere in the middle between two extremes, because you can have a bad Raw rating but still have more people see your main event angle than saw 10 years ago. Because of YouTube and a million hits that some things get, my argument is consistently, when your product is hot and you're doing your job, more people, week to week and year to year, will be watching your product start to finish than were a year or two ago or a month or two ago. If you're doing your job with some seasonal considerations that are inevitable, WrestleMania is a peak period, you should, if you're doing your job well, more people, not fewer, will watch your show this week than last week, and this week than a year ago this week, start to finish, when you're doing your job well. And so it's more nuanced than what can be put on a tweet on Twitter. But I think that getting back above 2.5, Kylan, is important, and I think it's something they should strive for. And I think there are some, it's like death by a thousand cuts. I think you can get above 2.5 through 50 small things that you do better. And one of them is, by the way, giving Alberto Del Rio and Roman Reigns some mic time to get people excited about sticking around for that main event match, or coming back for it at least if they tune out, because they're emotionally invested in the personalities fighting each other. I know that it's like what it's like, Matt, when I watch an MMA fight with two guys I don't know very well or at all, but I can get into that match because they cut a short soundbite promo, and Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg put in perspective what that fight means. And if that fight is put in perspective for me, and I hear from both guys, and they seem to want to get at each other and tear each other apart, and there's something at stake in the rankings, I'll watch. But if two guys come out and I know nothing about them because I flip on too late, I'm much less invested. So there are, and that's just one example from this week. There's a lot of things WWE can do to get above 2.5. And it's one good thing, Kylan, is not having your lead babyface being vociferously, passionately rejected by a huge portion of your paying customers. And I have heard, Matt, so many creative explanations for why Roman Reigns is not as unpopular as he seems. Because, well, that's only the ticket-paying fans who are really loud. And to me, those are the people who wrestling has always been, who have always determined wrestling success or failure, are, you know, the people who buy tickets and express themselves at the shows.
Who are buying his shirts? Because that's the other excuse I always hear.
Yeah.
If he's this big merch mover, is that not true, or is that true?
Well, he's a big merch mover in the sense that when you go, and someone pointed this out, when you go to the merch stand at house shows, guess who's your number one option in stock and prominently featured? And guess who parents... I mean, you can't buy a Sami Zayn t-shirt when he's not on a house show or he's not available. So the top guy is always going to—he's always going to sell more than everybody else because of the proximity and availability of it. But that said, in fairness to Roman, there's always—I was that fan once. I was 11 and 12, and I bought whoever the AWA put in front of me as a main eventer. They were my guy, and I'd buy their t-shirt because I liked wrestling. And if the top babyface was presented to me, I wasn't old enough to question that maybe he didn't earn it. Maybe it's the wrong guy. I didn't pick up on nuances that maybe I would have at age 16 or 26. So, of course, a top hero in this huge production that WWE creates is going to have 11-year-olds telling parents, I want that guy's t-shirt, because they want to wear it to school and seem cool. So, I mean, yeah, I that metric doesn't do a lot for me, because I think you can put a lot of people in that spot, and they're going to sell merchandise because of the machinery behind it.
Now, are you saying that they sell like a bunch of different variations of these shirts, and they always got them in stock, and there's no Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens shirts available at these places? Because I'm not there. I don't know.
Every time I go to a WWE event, I take a picture of the merchandise stand.
Yeah.
And yeah, people complain that, or I just say, you know, I mean, people have complained, hey, I went to the house show, My favorite wrestler was on the show. I can buy his t-shirt on WWE Shop, but they didn't have it at the merchandise stand because there's only so much display space. And they should. I mean, whoever they choose to push at the top, that should be who they push the t-shirts for. That should be the guy most featured.
Yeah, but you can't use it as a metric.
That's my point.
Use it as a metric, though.
Yeah, that's my point. Yeah,
okay.
Colin, you're still on hold. Do you have a second question for us?
Of course. My second question for you, Matt, I'm almost sad to even have to ask this, but my second question is, should anyone be willing to spend money to buy TNA as a promotion in light of their, for lack of better words, wretched reputation management-wise?
I don't know if that's a lack of a better word. I think that some people would describe that as a good choice of words, Kylan. I don't want to be too hard on him, Matt, but TNA does not have a...
No, it's accurate.
Yeah. Yes.
It's accurate, bro. Really quick, wait.
Yeah.
It's simple. I definitely would buy it. I would rebrand the name. I'd buy it because I'd want the talent. There is a talent that Jeff Hardy works. I'm sorry. Jeff Hardy, your work against Jeff Hardy, it's like wrestling against the friggin' Beatles in the middle of their... I'm telling you. They have enough guys there, enough stars there, in my opinion, enough young and up-and-coming hungry guys as well, that can be stars, okay? They just need the right people running the show from top to bottom. That's the only thing that has not changed. That's the only thing. The same thing with WWE. We're talking about the ratings and things like that to improve. There's just one thing they've not done yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's so funny that they're willing to push us wrestlers in and out of a company so quick and put all the heat on us versus looking at themselves in the mirror and saying, why are we doing this when we have the talents? We have all these athletic studs. Why are we getting rid of them and bringing in somebody else, give them 3 years, kick them out, bring in another guy? When the real answer has been the same damn thing everyone said from the beginning. You know, it starts at the top. And a lot of it is the creative. A lot of it is the direction of the company. I don't care about the pressures from the cable companies. I know that's a real thing. But guess what? I guarantee you there's a lot more pressure from the cable companies during the Monday Night Wars. And yet, miraculously, because they had the talent there and they kept them around, they stuck with their people that they were stuck in the trenches with. They didn't just leave them, you know. They miraculously found a way to write wrestling history books, if you will, on how great shows were booked, you know? So yeah. It can be done, and they need to start to look at themselves in the mirrors, but I would definitely buy it.
All right, we're going to go to our last break of the show. When we come back, we got a really good email, a two-parter, and another. We'll take one more phone call probably, 646-721-9828 if you want to try to sneak in. There's a chance we'll get to you, but let's go to our break, and when we come back, our final segment with Matt Morgan. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we're back, and let's go to a phone call first and then the email I talked about. 773, please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Boris from Chicago.
Hey, Boris, good to hear from you. What have you got for Matt today?
Well, I wanted to share something with you guys since I've been with around the Torch so long, and it kind of happened at the same time of Prince in China. I lost my sister Saturday morning, and we're a year apart, so I was like, I'm looking at what was happening with these guys, and I'm wondering about their family and how they're taking it. And then, I was hit with the news that morning, so. I mean, I can relate to that sense of what happened, last Saturday. So, that's my part of, tragedy, as far as, a passing of someone.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to hear that, boys. My condolences.
Right.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, so it's good to, you know, still try to, you know, continue forward and listen to Matt Morton again, which is a very inspiring person. You know, he's left the business.
Thanks,
man. And he's clearly one that you can actually listen to and get a really good point. Not shying away from you, Wade. Thanks for putting Patton East Coast at the same time. Appreciate that. I had to take the pop out. But my question is to Matt. What do you think about Adam Rose actually trying to come out against the policy, and do you think he'll actually say something, or he'll get snubbed or fired or something like that?
Thanks, Boris. Yeah, Adam Rose, you know, saying I got this. This story's going to live on forever. My suspension. I want to get my side of it out there. My family and friends are going to, you know, be able to look this up years from now, and I want to get my side out there. Boy, I just don't know how often that's a good idea, Matt. I mean, it sucks to be submitted to a drug policy and to feel that you were suspended and people are going to speculate. But as far as job security, it's rough to go out there and speak your mind. I mean, it's just the reality of working for a corporation.
I'll tell you too right now. I know he's a father. I saw that piece that was done on him on NXT, right?
Yeah.
And man, especially because he's a father, you know, I just would have. You got to be triple careful, man. It's you're giving your kid a lesson, and hey, you know what? What's right is right, and I'm standing up for myself, and that's good. But at what expense? Does it cost you a job? Does it cost you your living? What does it cost you? If it doesn't cost them anything, dude, more power to them. That's awesome. More power to them either way. But really, you got to be really careful, you know what I mean, about what you're doing when it comes to now having a family, you know?
And yeah, I'm sure when he wrote what he wrote, a lot of people said, you know, dude, if you want to work in this industry, you can't go into business for yourself like that. And, you know, have a private talk with your family and tell them what they need to know. But understand, life's not fair. Drug test. I mean, everybody who fails a drug test says, I don't know how that got in me, or that was a doctor prescription, or it was in a supplement, but the ingredient wasn't listed. I mean, it's the same story. Whether true or not, everybody's response to failing who speaks up on it is similar. And the public doesn't go, oh, okay, I believe him. You know, they just don't. So it's a no-win situation taking that approach. I mean, I can't even imagine a scenario where it pays to speak up. You just sort of have to take the blow to the gut, tell your family and friends what they need to know, and then sit out what you got to sit out and hope that you can earn back your place in the company. I mean, that's my general reaction to that, Matt. I just don't think you can't fight City Hall. You can't beat City Hall in that regard.
No, you can't. Especially them, you cannot. But wait, let me just say this: until it was just brought up, I forgot all about it.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show you that you don't have to say, you know what I mean? People, especially today in 2016, with enough of us out there screwing up and doing things that unfortunately are headline worthy at times, right? There's so much media out there to cover stuff now that guess what? There's Adam Rose, if you're listening to this, brother, there's 1,001 more things and headlines that have already popped up since yours did. So no one's remembering it. Don't bring it up anymore. There's no reason to.
Yep, I agree with that. All right, we couple emails we'll wrap up with Matt as far as listener contribution. Brian from Phoenix, Arizona, 25-year PW Torch VIP subscriber, says, Matt, what was the proposed idea for the finish of your TNA stealing Hulk Hogan's cape angle?
That was Hulk's idea, and God bless him because they purposely sat me out for the first time. Like, at the time they sat me out, I think I had the fifth most televised matches over like a 5-year span, they were telling me, right?
Wow, yeah.
I had a lot of overexposure. So a long story short, I was going to take time away from TNA, act like I was released or I quit and I'm going back to WWE. Anyways, so that's what we did. And when I came back, we did nothing with that. We did nothing with they put me with Joey Ryan in a makeshift tag team. And he's a good buddy of mine, but it didn't make sense with what was promised to me of me taking that time away and being on losing a little bit of money to take that chance and that risk to come back and trust them that they were going to do something much bigger with me. Hulk sees this going, well, why is he tagging with Joey Ryan? They don't
I don't understand. I thought we're doing something bigger with this guy. You guys said you're going to make him into our version of an Undertaker kind of thing. Not the same gimmick or character, but that type of guy that works every once in a while, not overexposed, which is perfect for me, my size, right? Make it special, mean more. And they didn't do that. And so he, I don't know if it was a last-ditch effort, he tried to, you know, throw his weight around, thank God, and say, look, he needs something different. We're not doing anything different with him. I'm doing this grand opening. Why not just have, you know, he talked to me about it first, and I was like, yeah, I'd be honored to, you know, come in and steal your Thunder Lips robe from you, have it on TNA TV that I did it, right? And then I'm automatically booked into something with Hulk Hogan. So, of course, I'm like, hell yeah. And the fact that he's going to bat for me was even more honorable, I thought. You know, so I'd rather do that than what was going to be planned for me. And then so the outcome of it was always going to be, if he was able to, you know, it'd be something with me and him one day down the road. But that was a very small percentile of that happening, a very small percentage chance, because he had just done his last back surgery. And that's when I was like, okay, well, we know we're not going to be able to, I'm not going to be able to work him, but that doesn't mean I can't still get the rub from him and backstage, you know, bullying him and things like that, that I kept doing on a week to week basis. I kept tormenting him as our GM and calling him out for making all these horrible decisions and being a villain, if you will. Their screw up is they never gave me the opponent to take that heat that we were getting from that, and feeding me the proper people or giving me the proper opponents to use that heat one way or the other for me or against me. You know, and yeah, that's where they screwed it up and dropped the ball. They kept going back and forth. We're tagging with Joey Ryan again, and now they're a tag team. Then next week, I'm by myself wearing the robe again. It was all over the place, man. And that's their fault, not his.
And one of the things that I like about TNA now is it's clear there's a booking crew with a vision for what they want the show to be, and they're executing it with follow-up. I mean, EC3 on Tuesday, finally losing for the first time by pinfall or submission.
Yep.
And it was in a main event, and it was well-built, and it was with a guy that they're hoping will be a top three or four or five player for them for the foreseeable future, in Mike Bennett. And there's an actual, I wouldn't say for the first time ever, but because it's happened at other times, but you can tell that there's not, oh, here's an idea, and then it gets derailed or forgotten about or not followed up on. And that's something that a lot, I mean, boy, if you want to lose an audience, get them invested in something and then abandon it. Don't follow up on it, or have it be an idea that works in a vacuum, but not with the talent that you have. You know, where were you going with that storyline, and who was going to be your opponent that made sense for that character they were building in you? So I like the cohesion now.
That's it. You're 100% right.
Yep. Brian also wants to know, what basic wrestling maneuver, Matt, should every big man know how to do? I've always liked the boot to the face, especially when Irish whipping an opponent into the ropes and nailing them when they rebound back toward you.
I'll give you one better. This big boot, but not off shooting a guy, because it's so basic nowadays. Everyone sees it coming, which isn't bad all the time, but it's been done to death. I always liked it where I'm on the sell, and I'm maybe my opponent finally works me down to one knee, and I'm selling whatever he's attacking, and let him hit the ropes on his own accord for more momentum to knock me off my feet finally and eat a size 18 right down his throat. Definitely a big boot. That's a good one. And as boring as it might be to most of you guys, a headbutt, a basic headbutt, because you can use it, a headbutt. I've always used it as my transition piece to get a guy to a part of the ring that I needed him in that he wasn't selling in for whatever rhyme or reason, versus wasting a punch. I didn't want to waste my punches.
I like that too. Okay, VIP member Lamar sent this in just a few minutes ago. What do you think about the idea of if we as fans are told in the storyline that you become eligible for a call-up to the main roster once you lose a championship? It's explained as not being a guarantee call-up, but that now WWE scouts are watching you more closely. It could be a case of that championship win making you eligible and you staying at NXT to fulfill your obligations as champion. Matt, the dynamic between NXT and WWE and how you explain call-ups has been difficult. Oh, Bo Dallas loses the NXT championship. He gets promoted. Finn Balor loses the NXT championship. We might see Sunday or Monday. He's been promoted. I'm a stickler for having things make sense within the narrative. I like there to be a reason. I think it's important to do that. I think it builds a foundation that allows you to get away with mistakes that you can't avoid when you have that solid structure and explanation for things. It's something Jim Cornette and Bill Watts and other successful promoters were sticklers for. So I like that. So the idea of winning a championship in NXT, making you eligible for the main roster, is interesting, but it's tough because then you say, well, you don't get to benefit from that victory until you lose again. But I don't know what other explanation there can be for somebody losing a title who's the main eventer of NXT and then immediately getting called up. It is a tough narrative structure to justify.
Honestly, and probably piss a lot of people off, I say tough, S-H-I-T, and say the guy's being called up to the big show. He's being called up to – maybe that's me as a performer saying that. I'm just ecstatic to get the friggin' call-up finally, right?
Yep.
And I dropped the OVW. I dropped the Ohio Valley Wrestling title to Elijah Burke, Pope, you know? Great. Good riddance. I had a great time as your OVW champ, Jimmy. You probably did more for me than anybody else in this business did, but guess what? I need to go make money now. You know what I mean? So you can't say that, obviously.
No, and that's the thing. How do the announcers tell that story on air? That you're
simple,
in developmental.
Very simple, one sentence.
Yeah.
Very simple. This, folks, this young upstart was our NXT champion, and he's had the scouts on him from day one, and they feel he's ready. Then your question is, well, man, he just lost the title. Well, with that puts your champion over that much more, that he's got the same eyes and scouts on him, too, and he could show up any week, too, maybe.
Well, and that's Lamar's suggestion, you know, is you know, kind of just say, hey, when you're champion, the scouts' eyes are on you. And it might not be till after you lose a title, but that's, you know, that's when you get rewarded for a title reign. And you could also argue the longer your NXT title reign, the more money and opportunities you'll have when you do get called up as sort of a way to build in an incentive for not just, you know, it's like there's
90 seconds.
NFL and NBA teams will tank and NHL teams will tank at the end of the season in order to get a better draft pick. It's NFL draft day today.
Yep.
There's probably a few cases of that today. You don't want to create the perception that the NXT champion would tank his title reign to get a raise and a bigger spotlight. So, you know, it's tough. It is. It's not a top 10 problem for WWE, but I think it's something that deserves a little brainstorming if there's a way to make that make sense.
And it will become maybe top 15.
60 seconds.
Getting. It will eventually, but you're right.
Matt, let's close out with a couple top thoughts for you on Payback on Sunday and a couple top thoughts from you on NXT, because I know we got cut off last time when we were about to talk about NXT TakeOver, Shinsuke Nakamura and his debut in particular. So take it where you want, but what do you have to say about WWE Payback, AJ and Roman, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, any predictions on the Bullet Club storyline, anything in that regard?
I'm hoping they don't screw up the Bullet Club storyline. I think they kind of – I don't want to say they already have because they have it. I'm not being fair. I always ask as a wrestler for all you guys as fans to stay tuned and then make your judgment. And I'm already catching myself being removed from the sport.
10 seconds.
I used to beg you guys not to do. Because I know that we know the Bullet Club story, everyone that really is into wrestling and immersed in it, right?
Yeah.
So I just hope it's not watered down. And I don't know. I don't know without the Young Bucks, no matter what they do, will it be watered down? I don't know. They need to get them on TV like yesterday. That's a whole other story. All right, Payback, though, I am so looking forward to my boy Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. I cannot wait to watch that match. Holy crap, it's going to be awesome. And then AJ and Reigns will be interesting, man. I'm hoping it's going to be great because AJ's my boy, and I want to see him do well on a personal level, you know? And
yeah.
AJ is a heel, and I don't know. Maybe he's done some work in Japan that will help him if he does need to be a heel here. I just think they're really missing sometimes the obvious carrot is the one to go after. And the obvious carrot is to friggin' make Reigns heel already. and just get it over with. AJ will be a remarkable babyface for that company. He's a phenomenal seller, pardon the pun, but he is. He's great at selling, and he's great at making that come from behind victory comeback with tons of fire, tons of contact. Did you see his forearms the other night? Oh my God, those were snug. They looked great.
Yep.
And from my understanding, talking to a lot of my friends that are working for WWE as performers, that they're all telling me that's what Vince wants out of him. They want him to be like this Pitbull type of baby face, which AJ as a human being is not, but AJ as a performer in that ring, body language and physically, definitely can do. And you saw it last week on Sheamus. Sheamus was whipping his ass all over the place. But when it was time for AJ to give it back, boy, did he. I was proud of him. Because that was a test. And let me be very clear to everybody listening to this show right now. That was a test, no ifs, ands, buts about it, by the brass. Can AJ take a legitimate ass whipping, not complain, and give it back when the receipts were due? And boy, did he step up. Go back and watch those forearms to Sheamus, guys. I loved it. I was proud of him. So that's going to be a good match, too.
How about NXT TakeOver, Shinsuke Nakamura? Anything from that event? No, less than a month ago.
Finally. About time. yes. Good Lord. You talk about somebody that just drips charisma. Oh, my God. Like, I remember him when I was in New Japan, and they were tagging him with Tanahashi. And me and Jindrak used to beat him all the time. And in six-man tags with Scott Norton with us, we would beat Riki Choshu, Tanahashi, and then, you know, Nakamura with them. And it was always Tanahashi was the bigger of the two. The way he was described as this is the guy they want to be their version of Randy Orton at that particular time, Tanahashi. The pretty boy, really good in-ring competitor, yada, 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 that all the girls like. But backstage, he was hilarious. He was funny. I'm not speaking about Tanahashi, obviously. Nakamura I'm talking about. And so now when I see how far he's come, it's amazing. Like, again, I'm a big stickler about body language and how he comes out to the ring, to his movements. They're all just so original. You know what I mean? I've never seen it before. At first, it looks... I didn't know if I was uncomfortable watching it, going, is this kind of weird and spastic, or have I not seen this before? And it was just me not seeing it before, because the second time I fell in love with him, like as far as everything he was doing out there. And he can be just an immense star for them if they just stay the hell out of his way. You know, please do not let him be some stupid stereotypical Japanese character. Let him just be what he is. He's awesome. And God, him versus Sami Zayn, that match, I said, I've been looking over my wife. I wanted her to watch it the second time I watched it on my phone. And I said to her, I go, I guarantee you there's not a WrestleMania match that will touch this match this weekend.
Yep.
And the WrestleMania was awesome. But I'm sorry, that match was just, holy crud. I was blown away by that Sami Zayn Nakamura match. And I look forward to a lot. I can't wait to see Nakamura versus Joe. You guys want to see chemistry together? Wait to see those two go.
Absolutely. I'm nervous and excited to see what they do with Shinsuke on the main roster. I'm not nervous, and I'm only excited about what they do with him in NXT. So there you have it.
Yeah, exactly.
Matt, it is great. Let's do this again soon. It's great having a conversation with you. If you keep watching NXT and WWE, your knowledge of wrestling and your history of being in the ring and being in multiple places, it combined with the knowledge of what's going on today, it makes you a perfect guest for the show. And I think the listeners and emailers and callers have all expressed that and appreciate it. So I really appreciate you taking time out for us again today.
Hey, Wade, I just want to say to you, the fans, anybody that did try to call in or email and wasn't able to, the questions, because I talk too much because I have diarrhea of the mouth, feel free to hit me up on Twitter. Use the hashtag PWTorch, please, and I'll answer all your questions, guys.
That's awesome. Yeah, and just, I mean, with our time slot, some people can't call because they're at work, and they're going to be listening to this on their drive home or are listening now but can't call in. So, yeah, and as always, keep an eye out for our announcements on my Twitter feed at the Wade Keller for future times that Matt Morgan is on and future times that any guests are on. We usually announce it ahead of time, and that gives you a chance to email your question in if you cannot call. Matt, well, first I want to thank our callers and emailers, some really good topics that I went to got brought up, and thank you again for your time and your expertise and insights.
Always my honor, Wade. Thank you very much for having me on.
You bet. That's Matt Morgan, The Blueprint. Great to have him on the show again. On that note, we will wrap up, and thank you, everybody, for your continued support of PW Torch Livecast. Go check out pwtorch.com right now or download it on your phone, the app on your phone for free in the iPhone and Android app store. Just search PW Torch and it will pop up. And if you are an MMA fan, while you're at it, visit mmatorch.com. A daily top five list. Some good stuff from Jamie Pennick and company on the daily top five today. The daily top five list today is the top five quotes of the week. There's a top five list every day on cool stuff. Top five stories, top five quotes, top five fights. Yesterday it was top five fights to look forward to in May. Before that, it was the top five performances of April. So some real good reasons to visit MMA Torch. Jamie Pennick knows his stuff, and we've got a good team of writers, and it is absolutely worth making that a go-to site every day to keep up on what's going on at MMA. Unlike other sites, they don't just tell you the news. There's a point of view associated with it. It's separate, but it's there, and it helps you kind of understand what the ramifications are of some of these stories. And it's a great layout. It's mobile-friendly, desktop-friendy, brand-new layout, and a great new app, too. So download that when you get a chance. That does it for me. Until next time, on behalf of Matt Morgan, my guest, this is Wade Keller, signing off.